This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Like many young, lonely, bookish girls who had suffered personal heartbreak, Margot Livesey loved Jane Eyre, Charlotte Bronte's classic story of a teenage governess who finds love by staying true to herself, convinced Margot that even if your life changes for the worse, it can change for the better again. Margot Livesey's new novel is called The Flight of Gemma Hardy, and it is openly reimagining Jane Eyre. The title character, like Jane, is an orphan. Gemma, too, is sent to a rough boarding school and eventually becomes an au pair. Whether or not she finds love and her independent self, we're going to leave up to you readers. Margot Livesey reads tonight at 7 o'clock, Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill. But first, she joins me in the studio. Margot, welcome. Such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. I'm delighted to be here.
Tell us about your early attraction to Jane Eyre.
I read Jane Eyre rather precociously when I was 9 years old. I was attracted to the book because it had a girl's name on the cover. And I was very full of myself for reading a book that had more words than pictures. And I identified passionately with Jane. I thought of myself as being small and plain, and I looked out of the window of our house and I saw the Scottish moors. And my father taught at a boys' private school that, to my mind, looked a lot like Thornfield Hall, with battlements and turrets and attics. So it was very easy for me to imagine my way into her life.
Did she stay with you? Did she stay with your imagination?
She did. And in fact, certain scenes in the novel are actually more real than things that have happened in my own life, I'd have to say.
Scenes in her novel were more real than in your life.
Yes.
Can I get you to read from the very beginning of your book, The Flight of Gemma Hardy?
Well, I feel ideally I should be playing these paragraphs, not reading them after your last guests. I'll give it a shot. We did not go for a walk on the first day of the year. The Christmas snow had melted and rain had been falling since dawn, darkening the shrubbery and muddying the grass, but that would not have stopped my aunt from dispatching us. She believed in the benefits of fresh air for children in all weather. Later, I understood, she also enjoyed the peace and quiet of our absence. No, the cause of our not walking was my cousin Will, who claimed his cold was too severe to leave the sitting-room sofa, but not so bad that he couldn't play cards. His sister, Louise, he insisted, must stay behind for a game of Racing Demon. I overheard these negotiations from the corridor, where I loitered, holding my aunt's black shoes, freshly polished, one in each hand. "In that case," said my aunt, "Veronica and Gemma can walk to the farm to collect the eggs." "Oh, must I, Mum?" said Veronica. "She's such a..." The door to my uncle's study was only a few feet away across the corridor. Hastily, I opened it, stepped inside, and shut out whatever came next. Not long ago, this room had been the centre of the house, a place brightened by my uncle's energy, made tranquil by his concentration as he worked on his sermons. But last February, skating alone on the river at dusk, he had fallen through the ice, and now I was the only one who spent any time here, or who seemed to miss him.
Margot Livesey, reading from her novel The Flight of Gemma Hardy. You did play that. The music in your writing is so beautiful and lyrical. It's just wonderful to listen to.
Thank you.
And of course, there it is, the red room. We've set up the red room right away. And something else about this, I mean, if you think about Jane Eyre, it starts as a Cinderella story. But unlike Cinderella, we don't need Prince Charming to transform her life. She takes agency. And I mean, I think that's certainly what Charlotte Bronte is famous for, creating that character.
I think Jane Eyre would not have remained in print for more than 150 years if it had not been that Jane Eyre isn't simply rescued by Rochester. She makes herself into his equal so that their marriage can finally occur in that famous last chapter beginning, "Reader, I married him."
Tell us more about Gemma. Who is she and her living situation?
Gemma is 10 years old when the novel starts. She was born in Scotland but spent her first 3 years in Iceland with her Icelandic father and her Scottish mother. And after they both die, she lives very happily with her uncle, a minister, for a number of years until, as you've just heard, he has a skating accident and drowns. And then Gemma finds herself with her severe aunt and her stuck-up cousins, snobbish cousins. And suddenly she realizes she's not a member of the family. She's really an outcast. And so when there's an opportunity to get a scholarship to a school, a boarding school, she greedily seizes it and goes off to Claypool School, thinking that she will get a wonderful education, and sadly discovering that she is, in fact, what they call a working pupil, and spends much of her time doing housework.
Scotland, then Iceland, and then they die. It doesn't get any colder than that.
Yeah, my novel does have a chilly gothic ring when you summarize it. But I hope that Gemma is sufficiently appealing in her stubbornness, in her longing to make her way in the world, in her sense of independence, that readers will want to keep her company despite the hardships she encounters.
Absolutely. I mean, in a way, in our earlier conversations, we were talking about flip phone technology and photographs, the way they highlight the color. And in some ways, in that setting, the color, the radiance of that hope and that willingness and desire to come of age really shines through in a way that's far brighter than it would be in a different environment. It's wonderfully done.
That is a lovely analogy, Frank. And I think this would be a good moment to say that although I was writing back to Charlotte Bronte, I really wanted to write a novel that could be read both by people who loved Jane Eyre, but also by people who had perhaps never even heard of Jane Eyre.
Oh, it certainly stands alone as a story by itself. But in the process of writing this, what was your relationship to the novel, to Jane Eyre? How did it change over time? It must have.
My relationship was one of, I would have to say, muted horror when I realized the presumption of what I was doing, that I was in a sense seeking to follow in the footsteps of a master. And That seemed really foolish.
But it wasn't deliberate. I mean, you set out to do it, right?
But I did set out to do it. Yes, it was not inadvertent. And I hid my copy of Jane Eyre as far away as I could in my house. In fact, so far away that I haven't been able to find it again. And I just wrote really out of my memory of that wonderful novel, but also trying to ask again Charlotte Bronte's great question, you know, what can a woman of considerable intelligence but no means do to make her way in the world? And how can you hope to find a home and a family?
Had you answered that question to yourself by the end of the first reading when you were nine, or somewhere along the line before you sat down to write this book?
I think I had not entirely answered it. I grew up at a time when really the professions open for women were nurse, teacher, wife, I'd have to say, or perhaps cook were the four main professions. And I wanted to set the novel around that time, just before the great wave of feminism broke over Britain and the States, bringing with it so many more choices for women and so many more opportunities.
Did your understanding of the novel or sense of the novel change by the time you finished your book?
It did in quite a number of ways. I realized when I went back to reread Jane Eyre, having finished my own book, that I had really forgotten the religious elements in Jane Eyre, which is actually quite an important part of the novel. Charlotte Bronte was a minister's daughter, so not surprisingly, and she wanted to be respectable as well as writing a passionate novel.
I want to ask you about the word flight in the title as opposed to journey or ballad. Why does Gemma become airborne?
I thought of flight as being a wonderful word for Gemma, both because of its ambiguous meaning. It can mean fleeing or it can mean soaring, and she does both. And she also is someone who is passionately aware of birds. At her loneliest, at her most desperate, she watches birds and she sees the freedom they have both to fly away and to make their own homes, to make their own nests. And both, I think, strike her as enviable.
Well, the language in this novel soars as well. Margot, what a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks so much for being on the
show.
Thank
you, Frank.
Margot Livesey is a new novel. Her new novel is called The Flight of Gemma Hardy, The Flight of Gemma Hardy, and she will read that book tonight. Not the whole book, because you want to leave some. You'd like people to pick up a copy on their way out of Flyleaf Books at Chapel Hill. 7 o'clock, Margot Livesey, the new book is called The Flight of Gemma Hardy.